Part 3. Harry Morgan. Winter. Chapter 9. Albert speaking. We were all in there at Freddy's place, and this tall, thin lawyer comes in and says, "Where's Juan?" "He ain't back yet," somebody said. "I know he's back, and I've got to see him." "Sure, you tipped them off to him, and you got him indicted, and now you're going to defend him," Harry said. "Don't you come around here asking where he is. You probably got him in your pocket." "Balls to you," said the lawyer. "I've got a job for him." "Well, go look for him someplace else," Harry said. "He ain't here." "I've got a job for him, I tell you," the lawyer said. "You ain't got a job for anybody. All you are is poison." Just then, the old man with the long gray hair over the back of his collar who sells the rubber goods specialties comes in for a quarter of a pint, and Freddy pours it out for him, and he corks it up and scuttles back across the street with it. "What happened to your arm?" the lawyer asked Harry. Harry has the sleeve pinned up to the shoulder. "I didn't like the look of it, so I cut it off," Harry told him. "You and who else cut it off?" "Me and a doctor cut it off," Harry said. "He'd been drinking and he was getting a little along with it. I held still and he cut it off. If they cut them off for being in other people's pockets, you wouldn't have no hands nor no feet." "What happened to it that they had to cut it off?" the lawyer asked him. "Take it easy," Harry told him. "No, I'm asking you, what happened to it and where were you?" "Go bother somebody else," Harry told him. "You know where I was and you know what happened. Keep your mouth shut and don't bother me." "I want to talk to you," the lawyer told him. "Then talk to me." "No, in back."
"I don't want to talk to you. No good ever comes of you. You're poison."
"I've got something for you, something good." "All right, I'll listen to you once," Harry told him. "What's it about, Juan?" "No, not about Juan."
They went back behind the bend of the bar into where the booths are, and they were gone quite a while. During the time they were gone, Big Lucy's daughter came in with that girl from their place that she's always around with, and they sat at the bar and had a Coca-Cola.
"They tell me they ain't going to let no girls out on the streets after 6 o'clock at night, and no girls in any of the places," Freddy says to Big Lucy's daughter.
"That's what they say."
"It's getting to be a hell of a town," Freddy says.
"Hell of a town is right. You just walk outside to get a sandwich and a Coca-Cola and they arrest you and fine you $15.
"That's all they pick on now," says Big Lucy's daughter. "Any kind of sporting people. Anybody with any sort of a cheerful outlook.
If something don't happen to this town pretty quick, things are going to be bad."
Just then Harry and the lawyer came back out and the lawyer said, "You'll be out there then?"
"Why not bring them here?"
"No, they don't want to come in, out there."
"All right," Harry said, and stepped up to the bar and the lawyer went on out.
"What will you have, Al?" he asked me.
"Bacardi."
"Give us 2 Bacardis, Freddy."
Then he turned to me and said,
"What are you doing now, Al?"
"Working on the relief."
"What doing?"
"Digging the sewer. Taking the old streetcar rails up."
"What do you get?"
7.5.
"A week?"
"What did you think?"
"How do you drink in here?"
"I wasn't till you asked me," I told him. He edged over a little towards me.
"You want to make a trip?"
"Depends on what it is."
"We'll talk about that."
"All right."
"Come on out in the car," he said.
"So long, Freddy." He breathed a little fast the way he did when he's been drinking, and I walked up along where the street had been tore up, where we'd been working all day, to the corner where his car was.
"Get in," he said.
"Where are we going?" I asked him.
"I don't know," he said. "I'm going to find out."
We drove up Whitehead Street, and he didn't say anything. At the head of the street, he turned to the left, and we drove across the head of town to White Street and out on it to the beach. All the time, Harry didn't say anything, and we turned onto the sand road and drove along it to the boulevard. Out on the boulevard, he pulled the car over to the edge of the sidewalk and stopped.
"Some strangers want to charter my boat to make a trip," he said.
"The customs got your boat tied up?"
"The strangers don't know that."
"What kind of a trip?"
"They say they want to carry somebody over that has to go to Cuba to do some business and can't come in by the plane or boat," B-Lips was telling me.
Do they do that?
Sure. All the time since the revolution. It sounds all right. Plenty of people go that way.
What about the boat?
We'll have to steal the boat. You know they ain't got her fixed, so I can't start her.
How are you going to get her out of the sub base?
I'll get her out.
How are we coming back?
I'll have to figure that. If you don't want to go, say so.
I'd just as soon go if there's any money in it.
Listen, he said. You're making $7.50 a week. You got 3 kids in school that are hungry at noon. You got a family that their bellies hurt, and I give you a chance to make a little money.
You ain't said how much money. You gotta have money for taking chances.
There ain't much money in any kind of chances now, Al, he said. Look at me. I used to make $35 a day right through the season taking people out fishing. Now I get shot and lose an arm and my boat, running a lousy load of liquor that's worth hardly as much as my boat. But let me tell you, my kids ain't going to have their bellies hurt, and I ain't going to dig sewers for the government for less money than we'll feed them. I can't dig now anyway. I don't know who made the laws, but I know there ain't no law that you gotta go hungry.
I went out on strike against those wages, I told him.
And you come back to work, he said. They said you were striking against charity. You always worked, didn't you? You never asked anybody for charity.
There ain't any work, I said. There ain't any work at living wages anywhere.
Why?
I don't know.
Neither do I, he said. But my family is going to eat as long as anybody eats. What they're trying to do is starve you conks out of here so they can burn down the shacks and put up apartments and make this a tourist town. That's what I hear. I hear they're buying up lots, and then after the poor people are starved out and gone somewhere else to starve some more, they're going to come in and make it into a beauty spot for tourists.
You talk like a radical, I said.
I ain't no radical, he said. I'm sore. I've been sore a long time.
Losing your arm don't make you feel better.
The hell with my arm. You lose an arm, you lose an arm. There's worse things than losing an arm. You've got 2 arms and you've got 2 of something else. And a man's still a man with 1 arm or with 1 of those. The hell with it, he says. I don't want to talk about it. Then after a minute he says, I got those other 2 still. Then he started the car and said, come on, we'll go see these fellows.
We rode along the boulevard with the breeze blowing and a few cars going past and the smell of dead seagrass on the cement where the waves had gone over the seawall at high tide, Harry driving with his left arm. I always liked him all right, and I'd gone in a boat with him plenty of times in the old days, but he was changed now. Since he lost his arm and that fella down visiting from Washington made an affidavit that he saw the boat unloading liquor that time, and the customs seized her. When he was in a boat, he always felt good, and without his boat he felt plenty bad. I think he was glad of an excuse to steal her. He knew he couldn't keep her, but maybe he could make a piece of money with her while he had her. I needed money bad enough, but I didn't want to get in any trouble. I said to him, you know I don't want to get in any real trouble, Harry.
What worse trouble you going to get in than you're in now, he said. What the hell worse trouble is there than starving?
I'm not starving, I said. What the hell you always talking about starving for?
Maybe you're not, but your kids are.
Cut it out, I said. I'll work with you, but you can't talk that way to me.
All right, he said. But be sure you want the job. I can get plenty of men in this town.
I want it, I said. I told you I want it.
Then cheer up.
You cheer up, I said. You're the only one that's talking like a radical.
Ah, cheer up, he said. None of you conks has any guts.
Since when ain't you a conk?
Since the first good meal I ever ate. He was mean talking now, all right. And since he was a boy, he never had no pity for nobody. But he never had no pity for himself either.
All right, I said to him.
Take it easy, he said. Ahead of us I could see the lights of this place. We're going to meet them here, Harry said. Keep your mouth buttoned up.
The hell with you.
Ah, take it easy, Harry said as we turned into the runway and drove around to the back of the place.
He was a bully,
and he was bad-spoken, but I always liked him all right. We stopped the car in back of this place and went into the kitchen where the man's wife was cooking at a stove. "Hello, Frida," Harry said to her. "Where's B-Lips?" "He's right in there, Harry. Hello, Albert."
"Hello, Miss Richards," I said. I knew her ever since she used to be in Jungletown. But two or three of the hardest-working married women in town used to be sporting women, and this was a hard-working woman, I tell you that.
"Your folks all well?" she asked me.
"They're all fine."
We went on through the kitchen and into this back room. There was B-Lips, the lawyer, and four Cubans with him sitting at a table.
"Sit down," said one of them in English.
He was a tough-looking fellow, heavy, with a big face and a voice deep in his throat, and he'd been drinking plenty, you could see.
"What's your name?"
"What's yours?" said Harry.
"All right," said this Cuban. "Have it your own way. Where's the boat?"
"She's down at the yacht basin," Harry said.
"Who's this?" the Cuban asked him, looking at me.
"My mate," Harry said. The Cuban was looking me over, and the other Cubans were looking us both over.
"He looks hungry," the Cuban said, and laughed. The others didn't laugh.
"You want a drink?"
"All right," Harry said.
"What, Bacardi?"
"Whatever you're drinking," Harry told him.
"Does your mate drink?"
"I'll have one," I said.
"Nobody asked you yet," the big Cuban said. "I just asked if you drank."
"Oh, cut it out, Roberto,"
one of the other Cubans, a young one, not much more than a kid, said. "Can't you do anything without getting nasty?"
"What do you mean, nasty?" "I just asked if he drinks. If you hire somebody, don't you ask if he drinks?"
"Give him a drink," said the other Cuban. "Let's talk business."
"What you want for the boat, big boy?"
The deep-voiced Cuban called Roberto asked Harry.
"Depends on what you want to do with her," Harry said. "Take the four of us to Cuba."
"Where in Cuba?"
"Cabañas. Close to Cabañas. Down the coast from Mariel. You know where it is?"
"Sure," said Harry. "Just take you there?"
"That's all. Take us there and put us ashore."
$300.
"Too much. What if we charter you by the day and guarantee you 2 weeks' charter?"
$40 a day, and you put up $1,500 for if anything happens to the boat. Do I have to clear it?"
"No."
"You pay for the gas and oil," Harry told them.
"We'll give you $200 to take us over there and put us ashore."
"No."
"How much do you want?"
"I told you.
That's too much."
"No, it isn't," Harry told him. "I don't know who you are. I don't know what your business is, and I don't know who shoots at you. I gotta cross the Gulf twice in the wintertime. Anyway, I'm risking my boat. I'll carry you for $200, and you can put up $1,000 for a guarantee nothing happens to the boat."
"That's reasonable," B-Lips told him. "That's more than reasonable." The Cubans started talking in Spanish. I couldn't understand them, but I knew Harry could.
"All right," the big one, Roberto, said. "When can you start?"
"Anytime tomorrow night."
"Maybe we don't want to go until the night after,"
one of them said.
"That's okay with me," Harry said. "Only let me know in time."
"Is your boat in good shape?"
"Sure," said Harry.
"She is a nice-looking boat," the young one of them said.
"Where did you see her?"
"Mr. Simmons, the lawyer here, showed her to me."
"Oh," said Harry.
"Have a drink," said another of the Cubans. "Have you been to Cuba much?"
"A few times."
"Speak Spanish?"
"I never learned it," Harry said.
I saw B-Lips, the lawyer, look at him, but he is so crooked himself that he's always more pleased if people aren't telling the truth. Just like when he came in to speak to Harry about this job, he couldn't speak to him straight. He had to pretend he wanted to see Juan Rodriguez, who is a poor stinking gallego that would steal from his own mother that B-Lips has got indicted again so he can defend him.
"Mr. Simmons speaks good Spanish," the Cuban said.
"He's got an education."
"Can you navigate?"
"I can go and I can come."
"You're a fisherman?"
"Yes, sir," said Harry.
"How do you fish with one arm?"
the big-faced one asked.
"You just fish twice as fast," Harry told him. "Did you want to see me about anything else?"
"No." They were all talking Spanish together.
Then I'll go, said Harry.
I'll let you know about the boat, B-Lips told Harry.
There's some money got to be put up, Harry said.
We'll do that tomorrow.
Well, good night, Harry told them.
Good night, said the young, pleasant-speaking one. The big-faced one didn't say anything. There were two others with faces like Indians that hadn't said anything at all any of the time except to talk in Spanish to the big-faced one.
I'll see you later on, B-Lips said.
Where?
At Freddy's.
We went out and through the kitchen again, and Frida said, How's Marie, Harry?
She's fine now, Harry told her. She's feeling good now.
And we went out the door. We got in the car, and he drove back to the boulevard and didn't say anything at all. He was thinking about something, all right.
Should I drop you home?
All right.
You live out on the county road now?
Yes. What about the trip?
I don't know, he said. I don't know whether there's going to be any trip. See you tomorrow.
He drops me in front of where we live, and I go on in, and I haven't got the door open before my old woman has given me hell for staying out and drinking and being late to the meal. I ask her how I can drink with no money, and she says I must be running a credit. I ask her who she thinks will give me credit when I'm working on the relief, and she says to keep my rummy breath away from her and sit down to the table. So I sit down. The kids are all gone to the diamond ball game, and I sit there at the table, and she brings the supper and won't speak to me.